All right, so you're a dentist, you're working as an employee, it's fine, it pays the bills, but you know that you can do more. Maybe you don't feel like you're receiving the respect that you deserve as a dentist, maybe you don't have the type of freedom and control over your schedule that you wish you had, and maybe you're just not making enough money because you're working as an employee. And so now you're starting to wonder, how do I become a practice owner? If that sounds like you, you are in the right place because today we are going to look at the steps to buying a dental practice. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist and I help dentists transition into practice ownership through my business, Practice Ownership Advisors. I've been through the process myself multiple times now, buying, managing, and selling dental practices. I've made every mistake in the book. My goal is to help you avoid those mistakes and to really take full advantage of this potentially life-changing opportunity. If you find today's video useful, you can check out the link in the description where you can download the free practice evaluation worksheet, which is a worksheet that walks you through the process of evaluating a dental practice, as well as the information for our service where we work with you through the entire process of evaluating and purchasing your first dental practice. So let's get started with step number one, the initial communication with the seller. If you have not yet found a practice that you're interested in, I have multiple other videos and podcasts on the subject, so make sure to check those out. In your initial call with the seller, you're going to want to ask a few very specific questions. The first and most important question to ask is ask why the seller is selling the practice. What is their motivation for selling the practice? Ideally, you want to hear back from the seller that it's either because they're retiring or because they're having some sort of health condition in which they're no longer going to be able to work at this practice. However, on the other hand, if the seller doesn't have a good reason that they're selling, that can be a cause for concern because it's possible that the seller is simply planning on moving across town and opening up another practice, which could be really bad because they could take a lot of the patients that they have along with them to that other practice. The other red flag you want to watch out for is possibly they're selling the practice because it hasn't been successful, because it's been a dud, because they're not making any money, because they're stressed out and they don't want to deal with this practice anymore. Just because a practice isn't doing well doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it. There's a chance that maybe they're just mismanaging the business. And if you come in and run things properly, this could actually be a really successful business. But if the issue is something like maybe it's in a poor location, maybe there's too much competition in that town, for whatever reason this practice isn't successful, you need to make sure that you figure that out before you buy this practice, because you do not want to buy the wrong practice. Buying the right dental practice can set you up for an incredible amount of success and freedom, but buying the wrong dental practice can be the biggest headache and potentially a huge financial stressor in your life. So you want to make sure that you are extremely careful when you are looking at practices to make sure that you are buying the correct practice. Next, you're going to want to ask the dentist just kind of general questions about the practice. Ask about the patients, ask about the location, ask about the history of the practice, ask about what insurances they're taking, just kind of general questions about the practice. Certainly later on, you're going to be going into much greater detail, but you at least want to get a general overview from the dentist to see what is this practice like. Finally, you want to schedule a walkthrough of the practice. You want to meet the dentist sometime after hours or on the weekend where you can walk through and look at every aspect of the practice and ask the dentist a lot more questions. So step number two is the initial walkthrough and the initial practice evaluation. If you found this practice through a practice broker, chances are you are already going to have a lot of the financial documents that have been exported from the computer system of the selling dentist. If you are not working with a broker, this first appointment is when you are going to want to start gathering all of those documents and information. I'll put a link in the description to a document that I have created, which outlines the three top pieces of information that you need to make sure that you are finding in this initial evaluation of a practice. To give a quick summary, you're going to need to have a profit and loss statement, ideally for the last couple of years, at least for the last year. You want some sort of indication of the number of active patients at this practice, and you're going to need to verify that number for sure. And then you're going to want to get a breakdown of production by procedure, a report that shows how many of each type of procedure the dentist had been doing and about how much he had been charging on average for those procedures, to give you an idea of where this dentist had been making their money from, as well as, is this the type of practice that you're going to be able to replicate their production. And then you're also able to get a good idea from that of what the percentage of hygiene at this practice versus the doctor's production, because that makes a big difference on whether a practice is worth buying. So you've had your initial call with the dentist, you have all your documents in place, and now it's time to walk through the practice and actually look at the physical building, the physical location of this practice. Once you arrive at the office, the first thing you're going to want to look at is the equipment's condition. You need to find out, are you going to need to be spending a lot of money up front to buy new equipment for this practice, or is the equipment at the practice serviceable and can it last for a few years? Look at the dental chairs. Those can be very expensive to replace. Look at the computers. Are you going to need to replace the computers right away? Look at the radiograph equipment. It's pretty common to find practices where the previous dentist was using outdated radiograph equipment. Although, yeah, it can be kind of annoying to have to buy new radiograph equipment on day one, it can actually be a pretty good sign if the dentist is using outdated radiograph equipment, because chances are they're probably missing a lot of things on x-rays because their x-rays don't have a high enough resolution, or maybe they're using old film x-rays, whatever it is. If you are upgrading the equipment, you're probably going to be able to see things that the previous dentist was not, which means more treatment for you starting out. You want to log into the computer and look at the schedule over the next few weeks to next few months. Are there enough patients on the schedule? Pay particular attention to the hygiene schedule. Is the hygienist or hygienist, are they booked out into the future? Or is there not even a hygienist schedule at this practice? If there is not a hygienist at this practice, you do not want to buy it. Under basically no circumstance would I ever buy a practice that did not have an existing hygiene schedule. While you are visiting this practice, check out how many operatories the office has and then see if there is potentially room for expansion into the future. Right now, you might think you're just fine working out of a 3-operatory practice, but the reality is going into the future, if you want to grow this business, you might be at a point where you have 3 hygienists working for you. And then guess what? They're taking up all 3 of the rooms and you have no room for treatment. That makes absolutely no sense. I would be very hesitant to buy a practice that has less than 6 operatories. As your business grows, you want to be able to hire more hygienists. You might want to have an associate come and work for you at some point. As you get busier, you're going to want to be able to do things like have an assistant in the room having a temporary maid while you're in the other room doing an extraction or working on the next set of veneers or whatever it is. You want to be able to see multiple patients at once. You want to be able to have multiple hygienists, and you want to have room to be able to expand if you want to have an associate there at some point. Now, just because an office is too small doesn't mean that you absolutely should not buy that practice, but it does mean that later on in the process, when you're looking at either buying the building or negotiating a lease, when you get to that stage of the process, you're going to want to consider, are you going to want to be at this office long term, or are you going to want to be there for maybe 2 or 3 years and then you're going to either buy or lease out another building across the street that's bigger and better suited for what you want to do? Depending on what area of the country you're in, you're going to want to make sure that there's adequate parking available. Especially if you're planning on growing this practice, if the practice doesn't have adequate parking, that can be a huge issue going into the future because it can be very, very hard to add additional parking. All right, so now you've evaluated the numbers at the practice, you've walked through it, and you've determined that this is a practice that you are interested in buying. What is the next step in order to actually move forward with the process of buying this practice? The next step is going to be the letter of intent. The letter of intent, often abbreviated LOI, is the way that we submit an offer to a seller to say that you are serious about buying a practice. The LOI is the start of the negotiating process. Oftentimes, the first letter that you send is not going to be initially accepted, but the seller is going to make some changes and send it back to you. It is not uncommon for this letter of intent to go back and forth 3 or 4 times before it is eventually signed by both parties. You want to find the balance between being assertive with the seller about things that are important to you, but also being flexible and not trying to negotiate things that aren't that important, because ultimately when you buy a practice, you are buying goodwill. You are buying the recommendation of this seller to the patients. And if you make the seller mad during this process, it can completely derail the whole entire purchase process and can mess things up. So you want to stay on good terms with the seller. Some of the main aspects that you're going to want to include in the letter of intent include the purchase price. Obviously, that's kind of the number one thing on people's minds, but there's also additional things that you want to make sure you're including in that letter of intent. intent. If you want to make sure that the seller is going to stay, if on the other hand, you want to make it clear that the seller is not going to be able to stay on after the sale of the practice, you want to make that clear in the letter of intent. If the seller owns the building, this is also the time where you want to start to talk about, are you going to buy the building from the seller? Are you going to lease the building from the seller? If there's any other types of expectations that you have for the seller, this is where you want to include it in the letter of intent. Because once we get further along in the process, it becomes much more difficult to negotiate things because the seller and you, the buyer, have already set your expectations on what is supposed to happen. This is the process where those expectations are set. So you want to make sure that you're being very careful about the things that you include or don't include in this letter. Now, oftentimes included with the letter intent is a deposit from the buyer called an earnest money deposit. The earnest money deposit is an amount of money that signals to the seller that you are serious about this practice. If somewhere along the way you decide you are not going to buy the practice, and assuming that the seller has not lied to you or falsely misrepresented the practice in some way, then they are going to get to keep that money. If on the other hand, during the due diligence stage where we look at the details of the practice, we find out that the seller had been misrepresenting the practice or completely lying about something, generally you are able to get your earnest money deposit back. For this reason, the deposit is generally held by a third party. You don't directly give that money to the seller. Maybe it's a bank, maybe it's the broker, maybe it's a transition company of some kind, but it's usually a third party that holds on to that money. Now, I have gone through the process of buying a practice multiple times now, and with some of the practices, I have had to give an earnest money deposit. With others, I have not had to give an earnest money deposit. You, as the buyer, if you can get away with not giving an earnest money deposit, that's obviously better to you because it increases your freedom. If you eventually decide that you want to not buy this practice, then you're not going to lose any money. But the seller might be expecting it from you. And if they're, especially if they're using a practice broker, the practice broker might recommend to the seller that they should ask you for that earnest money deposit. The reality is that it is a standard part of the process to give an earnest money deposit. Also, by giving this earnest money deposit, you are also having the seller agree that they are not going to be shopping around this practice to anyone else. What you don't want to have happen is after you've spent a lot of time and money with hiring a lawyer, etc., into looking into this practice, that the seller ends up selling it to someone else. Generally, this deposit is going to be something like 1% of the purchase price, so somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000, depending on the practice you're buying. Once you and the seller have both agreed on the LOI, you are both going to sign it. It's usually done remote. You don't have to do it in person. And then you're going to move forward with the due diligence, which is the next step in the process. Before we move on, do you need to have a lawyer involved with the LOI? To be clear, I am a dentist, not a lawyer. I am not able to give legal advice, but an LOI is generally not a legally binding contract. This means that the worst case scenario if the transaction doesn't go through is that you're going to lose your earnest money deposit. The seller cannot force you to buy a practice just because you have signed an LOI. Because legal advice is state specific and lawyers have to be licensed in the state that they are working in, but my general advice is you need to find a lawyer that has done dental transitions before. You do not want this to be the first time this lawyer has done a dental practice transition because there are so many individual unique steps that come along with buying and selling of a dental practice. If you are working with a lawyer where you're paying a fixed fee for the entire process, then you might as well take advantage of that and use them for the LOI. But if you are paying a lawyer $400, $500, $600, $700 an hour, I would be a little bit hesitant about overusing them early on in the process. For the first practice that I bought, I did use a lawyer for the letter of intent, but subsequent practices that I have worked on, I have not used a lawyer for the letter of intent. Once we get to the asset purchase agreement, you absolutely, definitely, 100% need a lawyer. But for the LOI, you don't necessarily need a lawyer. That's up to you. Once both parties have signed the LOI, the next step is going to be moving into the due diligence stage. Due diligence is simply a fancy legal word for saying, learn everything you can about this practice to make sure that the seller is not lying to you. You're going to want to dive deep into the profit and loss statement, income statement, as well as the balance sheet, getting an idea of what assets this practice actually owns. You want to dive deep into the fee schedules at the practice, the production by procedure report. You want to look into the lease that you're going to have to sign, whether it be through the dentist or if the dentist is leasing from another company. You want to find out everything you can about the employees at the practice, making sure that they're going to be staying on after the transition. You can't guarantee that the employees are going to stay, but if, for instance, the office manager is the dentist's wife, that's a red flag, because if the dentist leaves, chances are his wife, the office manager, is going to leave. Try to get an idea of how old the current employees are. If the hygienist is nearing retirement, there's a high possibility she might be leaving once the dentist leaves. You want to see how much the employees are being paid so you can get an idea of, does it make sense for you to continue paying these employees that amount? You want to make sure that you're diving into the schedule at the practice to make sure that the future schedule aligns with the past historical records that you've been looking at. This process is likely going to take at minimum a month, maybe 2 to 3 months. You are going to go into extreme depth here to make sure that you are buying a legitimate practice. In the same time that you're doing the due diligence, you are also going to want to be working on financing. The good news is that if you find the right practice that's worth buying, you are going to have an incredibly easy time getting, because banks love to give money to dentists to buy dental practices, because dental practices are incredibly low risk. They're almost always successful, and the bank is very confident that they're going to get their money back. You just need to keep in mind that financing can take a few weeks to a month or more once you start the process. So you want to get started pretty early, because you don't want to come to the closing date and not have the money available. Generally, the banks are going to want to see that you have a signed LOI, and they're going to want to see all of the financial documents for this practice, because they are also going to go through and verify the numbers for this practice. I certainly wouldn't rely on a bank to do the due diligence for you. However, they can also be very helpful in the due diligence process, because if you work with a bank, especially a bank that has done a lot of dental practice transitions before, they might notice some things that you weren't aware of and inform you about it. So they are also a helpful partner in the process of buying a practice. Once you've finished all the due diligence on the practice and you've secured your financing, the next step is going to be the asset purchase agreement, also called the APA. The asset purchase agreement is the legal document that officially transfers the ownership of the practice from the seller to you. The APA is going to take everything that you have negotiated in the letter of intent into account, and it's going to officially outline exactly what is going to take place during the closing of the practice. The APA is going to outline the purchase price, the assets that are being transferred, as well as any post-sale obligations, such as a non-compete agreement, which you are going to want to make sure that the seller is signing. While I am not a big fan of signing a non-compete as an employee working for a corporation or for another dentist, when you sell or buy a dental practice, it is very important that you have a non-compete in place, because you want to make sure that the dentist that you are buying the practice from is not going to go across the street and open up another practice and bring a bunch of those patients over to the other thing you got to look out for. Even if the selling dentist doesn't start or buy a new practice, they could go work as an associate at another practice and still bring a lot of those patients over. So it's vital that you have that non-compete in place. However, I wouldn't solely rely on a non-compete agreement, because sometimes dentists will break those non-competes, and do you really want to have to go through the hassle of hiring another lawyer and trying to sue and deal with all the fallout from this? Because the reality is, you just want to have a successful business. You do not want to have to deal with all of this additional legal stuff. So if you're buying a practice from someone who seems like they're young enough and have enough energy to start or buy a new practice, I just be extra careful with those types of transitions. The APA is probably going to go back and forth a few times between you and your lawyer and the seller's lawyer until you both agree on it. In the asset agreement, you're generally going to have the date of closing set. Once you're both in agreement with the asset purchase agreement, that's going to bring us to the last stage of the process, and that is the day of closing. All of this work that you've done over these months is going to culminate in the closing date. There's a lot of things that you need to line up to make sure that they are ready for that closing date. First off, you're going to make sure that you have finished your associate job and that you've sent in your notice with enough time for you to be finished in time for the closing date. Then you're going to want to make sure that your financing is lined up and that you have the money available to buy this practice. Depending on your individual situation with the bank might put the money in your bank account and then you write a check to the seller or you wire the funds over to the seller. But oftentimes you get the seller's bank information and send it to your lender, and the lender will directly send that money to the seller so that you don't even have to worry about it. You're probably going to meet at the practice. The seller is going to have the key to the building. You're both going to sit down and sign the document. You might have a lawyer there, you might have a practice broker there, but this is where you are officially transferring ownership of the practice and officially authorizing the bank to transfer funds to the seller. On the closing date, there's often going to be additional paperwork and things that you need to take care of on that day. For instance, you might need to transfer over the utilities. I recently sold a practice where the utilities provider required that the seller and the buyer be there in person at the utilities office in order to sign the documents to transfer everything over. So you need to make sure that you have everything like that lined up. You might need to go in person after signing the documents to the utilities or wherever to sign some different documents and things. If you're transferring a lease or signing a new lease, this is generally when you're going to be signing that lease, whether it's with the seller or with a separate company. And then unless the seller is planning on staying on for a while for the transition, this might be your last chance to ask the seller any questions, to have the seller walk you through the practice and show you anything additional that you want to see. So make sure you're asking all the questions, you're doing everything here, because even if you're planning on the seller staying on for a while, a lot of times that ends up not working out. So this might be your last chance to ask the seller questions. So make sure that you're asking everything that you can and that you're ready to take over this practice. So today we took a broad overview and looked at the process of buying a dental practice from start to finish. Obviously, you can go into a lot more detail and there are a lot of things that we didn't cover today. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and the podcast because over the next few months, I am planning on going into more and more detail on each of these steps. If you are at a point where you are ready to buy a practice yourself, make sure to reach out. Our company does practice evaluations to make sure that the practice you're looking at is worth buying, and we work with you through the entire process from start to finish in purchasing a dental practice. It's going to be a lot of work to become a practice owner, but it is 100% worth it.